Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way. Routine to difficult, they handle it all. At Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. I believe we have Bob with us, do we?
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. The outstanding Bob Nightingale, USA Today. Bob, welcome back. Happy holidays to you and your great family.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Steve.
Okay, so for some odd reason, we'll start with Shohei Ohtani. And the deferred money, how important is that as to how it's structured, not just for him, but also for the Dodgers?
Well, for the Dodgers, instead of paying, you know, $70 million a year in taxes, it's only come down to $46 million a year. So it saves him $24 million because of deferred. And for Ohtani, you know, it's kind of like a stroke of genius, really, because he's only making $2 million a year for 10 years. So when his deferred starts kicking in 10 years, you know, he'll probably move outside of California. So he's going to save himself 14% in taxes, or at least be greatly reduced from wherever he moves to.
And I don't think people realize this, in part because of a lot of deals that he has in Japan and so forth. I mean, his outside endorsement money is about $45 million a year, or at least in that neighborhood, I believe.
Yeah, you're right. He made $40 last year. Probably go up. His agency says it'll probably go up $10 million. So you're talking about a guy making $15 million a year off the field. I mean, no one comes close to that. Number two in baseball is Mike Trout at $5 million. I don't think anybody, I don't care if it's Jeter or whoever, I don't think anybody ever made more than $10 million a year off the field. You just don't get those kind of endorsement monies for baseball.
Right, no, this is LeBron, pro golf. Mickelson and Woods made all that money off the golf course. This is equivalent to that. Okay, so now with the Soto move to the Yankees and the Ohtani move to the Dodgers, how do you now view the current landscape of baseball?
Well, I mean, Dodgers still need pitching. I mean, J.D. Martinez, he was fine for them last year. I mean, he wasn't hitting, you know, 44 home runs, but he was still a solid DH. They need pitching badly. I mean, that's what killed them in the playoffs and down the stretch. So, yeah, they're going to be hard after Yamamoto. If they don't get him, you know, probably Blake Snell, maybe trade for Dylan Cease. But they got to come up with at least two starters. I think he goes to New York with the Yankees or the Mets. I'm not going to rule out the Dodgers, but just, you know, he wants the bright lights. He wants all the star power. It's kind of the opposite of Ohtani. He wants that attention.
So let's talk about Yamamoto. What makes Yamamoto a special pitcher, and how high can the bidding go for him?
Well, just the fact he's 25 years old, you know, won their version of, you know, of two Cy Youngs. Granted, you know, competition over there isn't like it is, you know, over here. I think there's only about 8 or 10, you know, really major league quality type of hitters over there. So, but yeah, the people love the age factor. That's the big thing. And I think the biddings can go over 300, Steve. I was told, you know, you're not going to get in under 300. The thing originally people thought 200, but it's gotten sky high. There's no pitching available, and to have this guy that young is a big coup for whoever gets him.
Soto goes to the Yankees. How did you feel about the return San Diego got for him?
I thought the Padres did very well for the return.
Agreed.
I mean, you know, it's like maybe, you know, 70 cents on the dollar compared to what they got, you know, gave up to get him originally from Washington. So I like the return a lot. They had no choice but to deal him. They have to get their payroll down. And for the Yankees, you know, they need a left-handed bat. You know, I think the big thing for the Yankees, they got to get him to swing the bat. You know, he takes way too many walks. You know, too many times he's caught, you know, looking at a called third strike. So I think the big thing for him is, you know, hey, drive in some runs, hit some home runs, you know, take advantage of that short porch.
Right, exactly. So, you know, Aaron Nola, the Phillies didn't make a lot of big moves, but they re-signed Nola. What did it mean that they were able to keep a homegrown kid?
Yeah, you know, they were kind of ambivalent for a while whether they're going to keep him.
Yeah.
I mean, during the spring training, he went over $200 million. They said no. Season ended. He's still talking about that. And they were prepared to go hard after Yamamoto. That was their second choice. And then he kind of made it, you know what, I'll drop my price tag. I really want to play here. And I think the fact that he kept emphasizing to ownership in the front office how badly he wanted to play in Philly, they said, you know what, okay, let's make it happen. So, you know, both sides did that compromise. That's a fair contract.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I want to talk to you about something I talk to with my my broadcasting class all the time. I teach one each semester at Penn State. And I tell them the same thing over and over again. I'd rather have you be second and right than first and wrong. Was the Ohtani situation, without getting into names, was the Ohtani situation a good example of that?
Yeah, I mean, it was embarrassing to the profession, to tell you the truth. I mean, to be that, you know, that wrong, too many people were wrong. And on a name that big, you've got to be ultra, ultra careful. You know, I remember when they, during the week, I think Tuesday or Wednesday, found out that, hey, the Dodgers called Joe Kelly on vacation in Hawaii and said, hey, would you change your number for Ohtani? And I said, that's interesting. I mean, to me, that means Ohtani's going there. I didn't write that it's going there. I just said, it may mean everything, may mean nothing, but here's what happened. You know, just kind of stick to the facts. In the case on Friday, you know, I wake up and someone had reported that a decision was imminent. So you check with his agency. No, the decision is not imminent. And then next thing you know, he's on a flight to Toronto. Private plane's leaving at 9 in the morning. Well, he sold his pajamas in Orange County, so he's not on that flight. And then, you know, early afternoon, someone reports he's signed with the Blue Jays. You know, quickly the agency says, no decision's been made. Yeah, later on in the afternoon, you know, another report is, the plane's about to land. You know, let's see when it gets off. People are, you know, watching this thing in real time. And finally, I said, you know, he's not, you know, he never boarded a flight. He's not in Toronto. You know, the stuff is just wrong. But yeah, it was for baseball writers, it was a very embarrassing day.
How long, in reality, has it taken for you to gain the trust of sources? And what happens? I know it's not you personally, but what happens in the profession when people skirt and start throwing stuff out there when legitimate guys such as yourself have worked so hard to cultivate the right people?
Well, when you're wrong like this, you lose all credibility. You know, there's a fan site in L.A. You know, no matter what they do, they could break the next 20 stories. They're going to be reminded of this, like the Aaron Judge thing a year ago. You know, people still bring that up. With Aaron Judge, Arson Judge, and all that. And so, yeah, you got to be very careful. I mean, it just takes time, to develop sources and to trust them. And you got to, you know, you got to make sure, too, that, okay, just because this guy says it, you know, unless he's the owner of the team or the GM of the team, you know, you better make sure he's 100% right. You better double-check that, too. And I think too often in our profession, you know, that the agents are, you know, running everything. Probably 95% of these stories are broken by agents or leaked by agents. And you got to make sure these agents aren't using guys, too.
Well, in fact, I think the last time I had you on, we talked about the Scott Boras press conference. because, let's face it, that's where a lot of news is made if he's out there talking about it, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of the prime guys. And, the bottom line, too, with the way it's structured these days, a team isn't legally allowed to say they're not in it. And so I made a point in my column on Sunday. You know, I could have said the Kansas City Royals are the number one suitor for Ohtani and they won't be outbid, even though it's 100% wrong. Legally, the Royals cannot come out and publicly deny it. That's just part of the collective bargaining agreement. Like, you're allowed to say you're in a player. You can't say you're out of a player. You can't say what you offered, that sort of thing.
Yeah. But again, that's what I tell my class all the time. I said, I want you to be second. I'd rather have you be second and right than first and wrong, because we're in a hot take world. Hot takes.
It's like I heard, he signed with the Dodgers on that Saturday. And it's like, well, let me double check here. Let me double check with the agency. I'm not going to be wrong. So, everybody had the same thing in a matter of, 30 seconds, 60 seconds. But you just can't take that chance.
What did you think about the moves the Atlanta Braves made?
I love the moves that, they always make. Be interested to see what else they do. They were in on Nola. They would have loved to have him. They had interest in Sonny Gray, too. I think they're going to be big on Dylan Cease, make a run for him. Yeah. But they grab guys, and guys love playing there so much. It's easy to get those guys to sign extensions.
So I'm down in Orlando doing Penn State basketball, and turned out Dave O'Brien, who does the Red Sox, was there. And I said, so Dave, what do you think of Breslow so far? And he looks at me and he says, geez, Steve, I don't know. He says, we're kind of waiting to see what move he's going to make. What kind of moves can he make in Boston right now? And does he have the freedom from ownership to do it?
Well, that's a big thing. I mean, Dave Dombrowski, made his moves and won a World Series. He's fired the next ball because they don't like his farm system. Well, how do you get great players by trading guys from the farm system? Then the last guy, Chaim Bloom, he's not spending money. He traded away Mookie Betts. He didn't want to trade away Mookie Betts. Should have gotten more back, sure. But he didn't want to trade Betts. And same thing here. I mean, I don't think there's any way in the world Yamamoto's going to Boston Red Sox. He wants the bright lights. They're ways away, I think, from being that power again. I think they're going to kind of operate like the Mets are. The Mets are in Yamamoto, but they're not doing anything stupid. They're kind of building for the future. That's why I kind of wonder what's going to go on with Pete Alonso. If they were going to sign him, they would have signed him already. So I get the feeling that quietly he's certainly available in trades. Maybe not now, but maybe this summer.
We saw the money, obviously, Ohtani got. That's a separate issue. How do you feel they are financially now in baseball, 2 years removed from the collective bargaining agreement? Do these things usually settle down monetarily, or do you see continued increases?
No, it's usually right afterwards. It's huge. Everybody's throwing money around, then it kind of slowly fades as it gets closer to the CBA expiration. So, no, I think it slows down. We'll see. I mean, obviously, Bellinger's asking about $250 million. I don't see him getting that. Blake Snell's going to try to piggyback off Yamamoto, who's going to get over $300. He's not going to get Yamamoto money. But, for a few cases like this, guys will make out. But you watch. There's going to be some guys, left standing around when spring training rolls around, and they outprice themselves and going to have to take whatever's there.
What's more interesting to you, covering the season or covering the off season?
I mean, I like the season better. I mean, off season, like we talked about, there's so many rumors and stuff like that. Yeah. And Ohtani was interesting. I actually appreciate the way it was handled. Where there's no leaks, nothing like that. Nobody was lying about things. Just very quiet. So, but there's not too many guys like Ohtani, Judge a year ago, where you kind of get excited about. So I like the regular season. I mean, to me, in the times of year, the most fun time of year by far to me is the playoffs. I love the postseason, knowing every game means everything. Second's probably spring training, just a relaxed time. New guys show up. Everybody goes to camp where the new guys are. Everybody's got filled with optimism. And then the regular season is probably third. You don't get really excited, really until September. The pennant race, mm-hmm. just because it's such a long, long year. Last year, there really wasn't that one compelling story. Ohtani for a while, but it wasn't like Judge 2 years ago going for the American League home run record or something like that.
Yeah, see, I'm still always about the games. Now, part of it is not looking at what I do because I broadcast Penn State football and Penn State basketball. And, yes, I do minor league baseball in the summer as well. To me, it's always about the games. And then the stories are nice beyond it, but see that's how everybody's wired differently. That's just me. I just rather the games.
Yeah, it's fun just to say. When you talk to managers, they say their favorite time of favorite time of day. It's just, you know, the first pitch. You know, all the rest they could have as far as meeting with the media, taking care of business, headaches. But just, you know, during the game, everybody can just focus simply on that. There's not another distraction out there.
Bob, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Appreciate the perspective on a wide variety of topics today. Really appreciate you.
Sure, my pleasure. Have a happy holiday, Steve.
Happy holidays, Bob. Bob Nightingale, USA Today. Neil Coolong in the next half hour. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. By the way, NBC has made a move on the playoffs. Al Michaels, who did the playoff game last year, he did the Chargers and Jaguars game last year with Tony Dungy. And it says that it's in his contract, and as NBC Emeritus, that he does a playoff game. He's not going to do the playoff game this year. Mike Tirico, Chris Collinsworth, and Melissa Stark will be on one playoff game, and the other one is going to be Noah Eagle, Todd Blackledge, and Catherine Tappan, who, of course, did Big Ten Saturday night. They'll get the other playoff game. Now, part of this, too, is remember, the one thing that they cannot do, they could not bring Al Michaels over with Kirk Herbstreit. Herbstreit is on loan to Prime. He is not on loan to NBC. So, you know, so they couldn't bring Herbstreit over with him. It's interesting because I watch Prime, and as time goes, I feel like Al and Kirk, and this is contrary to what some people think, but I think Al and Kirk work really, really well together along the way. Oops. Come on. Yeah, and I think that, you know, as time goes, they're working better, more cohesive, the whole deal along the way. I always find this stuff interesting. Let's see. 116 Penn State student athletes earning all Big Ten. This is a 3.0 or higher. Football had 32 of the 116 from the fall sports. So well done. Men's soccer at 12, women's soccer at 22, women's volleyball at 11, women's cross country 16, men's cross country 9, field hockey 14. So that's the third highest total Penn State's ever had. 131 in 2021, 117 in 2017, 116 this year. And that, of course, goes in conjunction with the 93% graduation rate, which is also a record for athletes. And it's interesting at the Hoops Club today, somebody asked about, with all the turnover, all the transfer portal stuff, you know, not just here at Penn State, but across the board. Somebody asked Dana O'Neill about, you know, what about degrees? And, you know, and she made a great point. Again, when these student athletes get into summer school, right, when they're in summer school, they're taking all these extra credits, which helps them get on track to getting a degree. And it was a great point by her. It's, you know, I know what... I've talked about that before. But with sports being year-round, that means you have to be in school year-round. So you take advantage of it. You build up credits. I think you can take, six credits each of the two sessions. That's 12 credits you can knock out just in the summertime if you do it right. That's why you'll get guys like Jalen Daniels, for example, who just won the Heisman Trophy from LSU. He graduated in 3 years. Micah Parsons graduated in 3 years because they took advantage of taking all the credits. And Daniels, of course, was a transfer. He started at Arizona State.
My ride smells just right, just right, just right, just right.
Y'all gotta try that for Breeze Car.
Just right, just right, just right, just right. La 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 la. With us for 40 days of consistent scent, all over Breeze Car clips right on your vent. You know my car's my happy place. Keep that smile on my face. When it smells just right, just right, just right. Breathe happy for Breeze. La 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 la.
People who come to Cricket stay with Cricket, just like our customer, Jaren.
I'm the singer and guitarist in a band, and I use my Cricket phone for everything. It's basically like another band member.
Don't miss a single beat. Switch today and get a free Samsung Galaxy A14 5G. Smile, you're on Cricket.
Real customer paid for testimonial. Must bring your number to Cricket on up to a $60 a month voice plan, depending on device. Select models only while supplies last. First month service charge and tax due at sale. Cricket 5G requires a compatible device and is not available everywhere. Fees, terms, and restrictions apply. See store for details.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sorry, I was on the phone with Mr. Ham. My apologies.
You're good.
No. Mr. Ham and I were discussing a slice of business that was important to us along the way. You're saying, like, what important stuff came up? Well, you could assume what important stuff didn't come up, and that was anything about the suit. So, time now for Tuesdays. With Neil. Neil Coulong, welcome, my friend.
You bet. As always, it's the best part of my week. It's a pleasure to be here.
How bad was that game on Thursday night? And can you believe this is the number 6 seed?
It's amazing how those two things go together. And I'll be honest, I'm not one to dive into hyperbole. There's a knee-jerk reaction that kind of comes with the territory. I tend to watch the game the next day with you know, more objective-minded thoughts, you know, as I'm watching it.
Right.
It isn't, but usually you see a lot of the similarities of what you thought at 1,000-foot level. On the second viewing, as you did the first.
Yeah.
I did not expect that, to be honest. I did not expect my rewatching of it for it to look as bad as it did in real time. In this case, it might have looked worse. And I honestly think Thursday was the worst game coached by Mike Tomlin in his tenure. Mm-hmm. They didn't do anything particularly well. They did a lot of really bad stuff, and they got a lot of low-level play along with low-level coaching decisions across the board. And it was that way for 4 quarters. I honestly feel like if Bill Belichick smiled at any point this season, it was on the flight home, thinking to himself, I can't believe we won that game. That we thought we were playing bad. I can't believe what I just saw out of them. The Arizona game, which incidentally is also up for debate of placement within the worst games Mike Tomlin has coached, those two coming back to back, it's shocking. It really is. This is a team, and obviously they haven't been high level competitive in a while. But typically, you're seeing their worst games early in a season.
Yeah,
coming down to the wire like this, and now getting to your second point about the fact that. After this weekend, after last night, they're the 6th seed in the AFC.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's good. You didn't pay deep of a price, but where are you if you won both of these games in which you were 6-point favorites at home? Where would you be? It's the level of frustration that's fair and understandable in this case. I feel like it's higher than it's ever been. This has been just a such a dismal season in so many ways, and it's not like, you know, injuries play a part in everything. I get it. There are years in which you don't catch a break health-wise, and everything falls apart. But this is just terrible play from players that they need to step up and play a lot better than they have. They need their coaching staff to really honestly recognize the situation that they're in and make decisions accordingly. These things aren't happening, and that's how you lose to what's otherwise bad NFL team. But the reality is, they were worse than Arizona when they played Arizona. They were worse than New England when they played New England. Those teams didn't steal those wins. They clearly won the game. New England was probably closer than it should have been. So I don't know. I don't know what direction they're going in. But at this point now, you've got to call everything. You've got to call everything out, because the last four games are tougher than the previous four games were. And they lose four in a row to end the year, things aren't going to go well. I know that, and I can't count on them beating any of these teams down the stretch. They should be on a 5-game winning streak by rights right now, but they've played their way out of three of the last four games, and it doesn't get any easier for them.
So that brings me to the next part. If they're the number 6 seed at this hour in the AFC, what does it say about the other 10 teams behind them?
Two perspectives of this. One, I would say the Steelers got 7 wins regardless of where they are. They have 7 wins. Other teams are at or around that level, and from there you're looking at, you know, mathematical comparisons as far as tiebreakers go. And it's a long season, so it'll play itself out. Where they are right now, it's reasonable to say, well, the Steelers have 7 wins. That's why they are where they are.
Right.
It's not just up to the last 2 weeks. The other perspective, though, is, and we've been saying this for 4 years, it comes down to the wins that the Steelers steal in one place or another throughout the season. And it's like this every season now. They shouldn't, the way that they have played, they should not be in the position that they're in. But they are, because other teams don't do what Arizona and New England just did, which is, we're not playing down to your level. We're just going to do what we do. We're not going to turn the ball over. We're going to make you pay if and when you do. And we're just going to, you know, be here. We're not going to do anything to let you, you know, kind of siphon out the victory here. We're just going to stay, you know, due north here. New England didn't do anything fancy. They had 2 good drives the entire game. Their defense was good enough, but it was beatable. There was nothing about that game that Pittsburgh should not have won at the end of the day. And Arizona was a complete train wreck defensively for Pittsburgh. So Arizona and New England didn't give the Steelers a doorway back into the game the way that we've seen, most notably Baltimore earlier this season.
Right.
Looking at the trajectory of these two franchises right now, you'll forget quickly that Pittsburgh beat Baltimore earlier this season,
right,
a game that Baltimore absolutely should have won. Pittsburgh picked up 2-3 of those types of wins this year. That's why they're in the position that they're in. They're not going the way that it looks. It's going to be very hard for them to end the year better than what their midpoint was, but they're not out of the woods yet, and they're going to have to change a lot of things. They're going to have to fix a lot of things if they want to move past this. But as far as the AFC is concerned, I think we'll see who the contenders are versus the pretenders over the next probably even 2 weeks, maybe even starting Saturday with Pittsburgh at Indianapolis. Those are two of them right there. One of those teams is going to move on, and one of them is going to basically be eliminated in losing this game. It's a huge tiebreaker game. Both teams need this badly.
George Pickens did not handle Thursday's game well. Where is he right now? What do you think of him, A, as a talent, and B, as a football player now?
I like the way you worded that. I think, though, the man bites dog story would be George Pickens handles frustration well, to the point where Mike Tomlin is being asked about it on a weekly basis at his press conference. He's not going to enjoy that for all that much longer if he does.
Right.
And it the negativity surrounding Pickens, the criticism, it seems to fuel him to do more of it. And it's just like, look, you know, I've referred to him as a YouTube receiver, which is really a guy that can make highlight plays but is not a great three-down wide receiver. Right. I was discussing this with people yesterday. On Sunday night, I watched A.J. Brown and CeeDee Lamb play for their respective teams. Obviously, mm-hmm. Lamb got the better of Brown's team in that game, but those are two consummate high-level professional wide receivers. They run every route. They go every distance. They make combat catches. They make yards after the catch. They're catching behind the line of scrimmage. They're getting downfield and blocking. They're actively engaged in the game. None of that can be said about George Pickens. And if you want to go back to this and argue with me about it, I'm sorry, but nobody was bigger on George Pickens when they drafted him than me.
That's
nobody.
Right.
Nobody knew
exactly
who George
right.
Pickens was. Okay.
Exactly right.
Huge upside. One of the best ball-tracking wide receivers I've seen at the collegiate level. He's a hawk. So much natural talent. One, yes, your offensive scheme is a problem. Clearly it's a problem. That's not going to change. What are you going to do to help it? That's what I want to see. What I saw out of Pickens is a guy that is running mediocre routes, not being particularly open, and then being really upset when he doesn't get the ball. That's the guy that's coming back and saying, doesn't matter if I'm covered, you need to throw me the ball. Okay, that's not going to happen, okay? It doesn't need to be explained to you why they're not going to throw it to you if you're not open, okay? I don't care how acrobatic of a receiver you are. You need to get open. That's the problem here. He's not doing that well enough, but at the same time, this is a horrendous passing offense. I can understand the frustration. I get that part of it. I'm not down on him for a lack of production. I'll defend him in that he probably should be getting the ball more, but there's a lot that goes into a receiver getting the ball. He isn't doing anything with what he's getting at all. And a large part of that, admittedly, is you don't see the effort. He's not putting a whole lot into anything that he's doing. You want to see him trying to make plays. You know, you can shut A.J. Brown down. He's a great player, but you can shut him down. You're going to see him working his tail off every single snap, whatever it is. He's going to make the most out of what he gets. I don't see that at all from Pickens. And the fact that he is a second-year player with no pedigree at all in the league, very few plays that he's made, I'm done with it. I really am. He's a great player, but frankly, every team's got somebody kind of like George Pickens. There's a lot of good ones out there, a lot of guys that develop into better ones. I'm not seeing that from him right now. And maybe I'm a little burned still on Chase Claypool, who is the model of this problem
right.
Within the NFL. But Pickens can be doing a lot more than he is with what he has. That said, yes, the scheme is not utilizing every area of the field probably the way that it could. But I have to think some of that is because you have a receiver that doesn't run routes. He really just kind of...
Yes.
jogs down the field and turns around toward the ball. He's not making quarterbacks work very hard. And that doesn't really compel a quarterback to throw you the ball that often. He's not as open as he thinks he is, let's put it that way.
Which then brings us to Indianapolis. Indianapolis started the year with a problem with Jonathan Taylor, you know, contract-wise, and then they got that straightened out. Anthony Richardson was their starter. He got hurt. Gardner Minshew is now the quarterback there. What does it say to Pittsburgh fans that they're also 7-6 and they actually look good doing it?
I'd say that they have an offensive staff that's more invigorated.
Yep.
They have a better quarterback, clearly.
Yep.
To me, they've just put more together. I don't think that they are necessarily more talented. I don't think either of them are especially talented offensively. Indianapolis's arrow is pointed up, though. Pittsburgh is pointed way down.
Yeah.
This is why Pittsburgh has gone from 26 points a game to like 20 to 18 and now to 16. They're getting progressively worse. Indianapolis hit a bottom, and they're going to improve. They went out and got an excellent offensive-minded coach who's learning kind of the inner workings of everything. He's a good leader. He's been around good leaders, and his players are playing for him. To be honest, I'm just not seeing the Steelers playing very hard, and we don't have to look. We are able to look past Johnson and George Pickens, who are easily the worst offenders of this. Other guys, just they're not going on a game-to-game basis as hard as we've seen Steelers teams like this in the past. And a large part of it is I get that they're probably a bit disenfranchised over their offense. It's embarrassing at this point. But usually they have something to make them believe in going out and executing, and they're just not doing that. That's when you watch the tape of the Colts, you see a team that's not all that talented, but they're fighting. They want to be out there. They shouldn't have 7 wins. You know, my opinion, well, to be fair, I think if Richardson played the whole year, they probably have fewer than 7 wins. But they're a competitive team with what they have, and that's without Taylor. They're getting a huge run out of Zach Moss. They're getting above-standard play out of their offensive line. It looked like, from what we saw in previous years, Quentin Nelson is not the same player he used to be. Looks like he's coming back a little bit. They're getting more out of a lot of guys on that team, and they're not horribly untalented. But the Steelers are probably looking up at the Colts right now, largely because they're doing more with roughly the same, if not less, than what the Steelers have. And that should be alarming for anybody, because Indianapolis drafted in the top 3 last year and aren't even, you know, really getting run out of the guys that they were able to get because they finished in the bottom 3 of the league last year. So I don't know. We're going to know a lot more after that Indianapolis game. I'll say that. The Steelers might be able to resuscitate their season here, or largely could be over. You know, another poorly played game from them. I don't know how the team will recover from that.
Which then brings up this. You and I have never once sat here and said, you know, Mike Tomlin needs to go. We've never done that. We've stayed away from it because, you know, there's no need to talk about it. But let me ask you something. What could the next month define his role with the team?
I want to highlight one thing that you said. We've been doing this for, what, 11 years, 12 years, something like that?
Yep.
And you're not lying. We have not seriously had that conversation. There have been, you know, kind of toss-ups. What do you think will happen? Nothing. You know, they're not at that point. Right. Looking at this holistically now, here's the issue that I have, and this is a part I don't think that's getting mentioned enough, and I don't really understand why. Tomlin did not sign an extension last year.
Right.
2024 is the last year of his contract. Now, at the NFL level, more so in college, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on that. Maybe more so in college, but in the NFL, a head coach does not enter the final year of his contract.
No.
If he has any standing in the organization. Mike Munchak was asked going into the final year of his contract, here's an extension for you, but we want you to fire half your staff. He said, no, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
So
right.
They fired him. He quit, whatever you want to call that. He wasn't coaching there anymore.
Right.
That's kind of what you're saying to your coach now when he has to coach into the second to last year of his contract.
Mm-hmm.
You're being held up for referendum for something. There's some reason why he doesn't have an extension. Now, the other side of it is, who's to say it was offered and Tomlin didn't want to sign it? Maybe Tomlin, you know, sees this like the rest of us in that Matt Canada is not really on the level that we need him to be. This offense is a train wreck. We're going to go out and do the best that we can, but I don't know what's going to happen here. We're not all that talented. I know we've done a bunch of things. I don't see positivity coming out of this offense this year, to the point where now he doesn't sign an extension. Whether it was offered or not, I don't know. An extension is not signed. Going into the season, the team does something it has not done, not only in Tomlin's tenure, but in the life cycle of pretty much anybody watching the NFL anymore. They fire their offensive coordinator in the middle of the season. That's a bold move, and one that, frankly, I think is deserved for where they were. If Tomlin is the one who made that decision, what does it say about where he feels he is with this team? This can't happen anymore. I'm trying to coach for my future job. I can't do it with you anymore. It's getting to that point now. Something needs to give. And that's really what it comes down to me now. Does this look good to you or what? What about this works in your mind? You have gotten progressively worse, and there really isn't anything to suggest it's going to get better anytime soon, because you get into the real problem with the extension, the lack of the extension. Hiring an offensive coordinator nowadays, you really kind of have two paths. There are the young, innovative minds that have reputations and names. They're doing great things somewhere. You can't hire them as a coordinator if they're already a coordinator.
Right.
You almost can't even hire a position coach to be a coordinator anymore because the team has lots of ways to keep them. If you want the bright, young, offensive guy, you got to hire him as head coach. And while everything I just said is not the way that the Steelers are thought to act, I would also point out that the stability that they're praised for also means they are the least experienced head coach hiring franchise in the league. So what are you basing future decisions on? The way the market works today or what they did back in 2007? What makes more logical sense to you? And keep in mind, Dan Rooney hired Mike Tomlin, not Art Rooney. Dan Rooney made that decision. So we really don't have any particular reason to say they're going to do things the way they always do, and they're going to go out and find this unknown coach somewhere and hire him. We know who everybody is now. The world's a lot more connected than it used to be. So it's to me, there's a referendum. There's a line that's drawn in the sand, and I think both sides can make this argument. Do the Steelers want to say, it's okay, Mike, everything you've told us the last 4 years is basically the same thing that you're going to tell us now, but all is good. Let's run it back. Let's do the same thing again next year. Let's see if we can average 14 points a game and still win 8-9 games. Right. That's what we want to do. Or are they saying, something's got to give here, and you made these decisions. These are the guys that you wanted to bring in, and this isn't working. We need to get rid of all of them. Are you on board with that? Tomlin says no. He can get a job in 5 seconds. Everyone else will tell you that. That isn't a reason to keep a coach, but it is a reason for a coach to not stay. Does he need to deal with this? Where is it going? Does this look good to you? Where's the direction of this team right now? It's a dumpster fire. So if that's happening, does Tomlin want to stick around? That's my main question.
Great question. As always, my friend, thanks so much. Next Tuesday should be even more interesting.
Definitely will be. Thanks for having me, guys.
Neil Kulong. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Your home for news, AccuWeather, and sports. Celebrating 90 years of serving the Susquehanna Valley. We are WKOK Sunbury.